When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We've got an exciting show. We're going to talk about Goldberg's visit to Speedcore, some ideas for his new projects, and I want to get your thoughts. Should I get a Gen 1 Ford Lightning, which is a truck that I love? Before we get started, I'll tell you about Continental. If you think of all the weird things that you find in cars, and I'm not just talking about French fries or melted crayons, I'm talking about live snakes, bizarre trinkets, stuff that really makes you wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. I bet you didn't know that they're OE in millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, BMW, VW, and GM vehicles. Continental has launched their aftermarket multi-V belt with this OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series of belts. They're fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. So Continental's OE technology series multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit oetechnologyseries.com. And of course, CarCast is brought to you by Dodge. It's Dodge Performance Days, where we celebrate speed, power, and performance. And that new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burnt rubber with the Dodge Charger and its available best-in-class 485 horsepower. All right, let's get started. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to CarCast. I am Matt, the Motorator D'Andrea, with Bill Goldberg calling in. Lots of stuff to cover. Bill, I know you took a trip. We discussed it last week. You took a trip out to the guys at Speedcore. There was an event. You sat down with them, put a game plan together on a car, which maybe turned into two cars or three cars now, so we'll get into that a little bit as well. And some interesting stuff. I've got a truck project I want to run by you guys, and a couple of other things that should be interesting. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Dodge. There's no better time to celebrate speed, power, and performance than during Dodge Performance Days. So hurry in and replace that new car smell with the scent of burnt rubber, which I love that. And it brings me to this point of, you know, we've been hearing for a little while about a Ram truck, a Ram competitor to the Ford Raptor, the Ram TRX. And I think this thing was teased a while ago with potentially like a 525 horsepower engine. I don't know if that meant supercharged or not. That probably sounds like a hopped-up version of their naturally aspirated Hemi engine. I guess there was some testing going on in Michigan in the sand dunes up there, and they had a bunch of these trucks out there sort of, you know, camouflaged up, all in black or something. And they had a handful of these out there along with a Raptor, and I guess they were just kind of doing some comparison testing, but there were some other people out there riding ATVs and pickup trucks and stuff, and they posted a video of it. And the video is kind of long, but they shot a video, and you can kind of start to pick up on some of the details, just sound and whatnot, from these Ram TRXs. And there's a lot of supercharger whine going on there. So now,
yeah, it's starting to think. Yeah, I was just going to ask you if you could differentiate that between the others.
Yeah, it's that, and I could swear I keep hearing like one of the ATVs, like a four-stroke ATV, kind of dominating the sound, but you kind of have to pick apart that video and you can hear some of that supercharger whine. So it very potentially could be a Hellcat powered truck. Now, I don't think this is unreasonable. The reason why is because the current Ford F-150 platform, with the Raptor especially, it has the EcoBoost engine, the 450 horsepower or something it is. But there's talk of them saying, hey, before we're done with this current Raptor platform, we're gonna shoot a Hail Mary, and there may be a limited hot version of the Raptor with the new Shelby GT500 engine in it, which would instead of the 450 horse EcoBoost 6 turbo, it could be a V8 supercharged with 700 plus horsepower. It could be like a 750 horsepower truck.
Darn.
And because you and I both drove the Raptor with the 450 horse, and it's cool and it's definitely capable, and that suspension is fantastic, and I know you can throw a tune in there and probably pick up another 60 horse no problem, and some exhaust or something, and it would even make it even better. But man, a 300 horsepower bump with a V8, but that sound though that you'd get from it. So it could be kind of interesting. So I don't know, like, what's your thoughts? What do you think? Do you think Ram needs a 700 horsepower pickup truck to compete with the Raptor?
You know, here we go again.
It's not about
we've been calling for this for years, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there definitely is a need for it, but is it too late? I guess it's never too late, but I think they could have capitalized big time on it if it was out a number of years ago. But hey, better late than never. I think it's a great idea. I think it's an idea that has been thought about before, because yours truly is putting a Hellcat engine in one of his trucks.
Yeah.
So, I'm very excited about it. Hey, anytime you stuff that motor in anything, I'm gonna want to drive it.
You're gonna want to drive it.
Yeah. I think it's a different sector of people that they can bring in that they may not have had in the beginning as quote unquote muscle car guys that fall into that category. But I don't think it's beyond the scope of reality.
It's interesting because I think the Raptor does pretty well. It certainly gets a lot of press. People seem to really love them. They must be selling it well enough to do two generations of it, the V8 and the EcoBoost. But there's a couple of aftermarket companies that try to do like Silverado versions. Even our buddy Ken Linkenfelter had kind of an aggressive looking off-roady Silverado, and just maybe when the aftermarket gets a hold of it, it's a little too expensive. I don't know how well his trucks sold, but maybe it was fine. Maybe he only needed to sell 50 of them to kind of make a point and make a business case out of it. But I don't know. I think there's such a division between sort of the Ford guys and the Chevy guys and the Ram guys that there's enough Ram guys saying we want a Raptor competitor, but we wouldn't dare touch a Raptor,
but my point is, again, is it too late? I mean, did you not answer the call in time enough? I mean, I think that, I don't know.
I would say
better late than never. I mean, it's not like I'm not going to want one, but
yeah.
Still, it might have soured a couple people in the, there's such a force in the automotive world, and they didn't have a competitor for the Raptor for a number of years. And we still don't know 100% if they're going to have one out. So,
yeah,
all this anticipation is great, but man, give us the product.
Yeah. I guess my thought on it is if the TRX came out with a 525 horsepower engine, I think it's not going to work. Fail.
It wouldn't be nearly as attractive to anybody. No way.
Huh. No. And I think stepping up to a Hellcat engine with the supercharger, is the way to go, and probably the only way to go. In my opinion, that's the only way to go on this, is all the hype around this brand right now, and for good reason, is around these engines. And there are so many variations on this engine that I don't know how long this is going to last for them. Maybe they're going to switch to turbos at some point, or something more fuel efficient or whatever. But for now, they need to run with this. If they build this truck, I think it needs to be 700 plus horsepower. I know they were thinking, hey, you know, Raptor's 450 horse, we can go 525, we can crush it. But even just the mention of Ford doing the GT500 engine in there is a game changer, and then that's a total fail. You can't have next year's auto show and Ram's like, here it is, the TRX we've been teasing for years, 525 horsepower, and then two booths over, Ford's like, we've already been doing it for years. We already know the suspension works. We know how to dial it in, and we made 750 horsepower. So it would just, you'd have to go Hellcat engine. But anyway, that's my thought on it, is go Hellcat, go Demon.
Hey, just put a Hellophant in there.
Yeah, put the Hellophant in there. I see, the thing about the Hellophant is I wonder if they did a production version, you know, like a version in a production car, if it would pass the emissions and all that stuff. And then you're going to have a big gas guzzler tax and other things. Like, I get it's basically the same engine. They just keep putting a bigger blower on it. But,
it is and it's not. I mean, there's some internal parts that are different, but for the most part.
Anyway, it's kind of interesting. I kind of like that Ram is teasing this. They're out there. These guys look like they were having a little bit of fun in the dunes and the sand dunes up there. And, it looks like it's gonna happen. I don't know the rest of the specs on it, but it's kind of interesting. But anyway, tell me about SpeedCore. What happened out there? You went out there and you were talking to them about a couple of the cars. You've got the wide body Challenger. That was the skinny tire car. You guys made the wide body, the carbon fiber. We talked about quite a bit. Added some horsepower with the boosted the supercharger and stuff, and then you said that was probably going to go back and get the roll cage in it, and then you're going to send the charger. You had the skinny tire charger that was going to go for a big horsepower upgrade and maybe a wide body conversion as well. And then you said maybe they were going to do an all-wheel drive. Like, it was being discussed. We didn't know if it was a Mopar parts or some of their parts or a combination of both, but you went out, you had a meeting with them. Dude, tell me what happened. How'd it go?
You know, first and foremost, let me tell you that one of the caveats for this automotive craze is working with great people. Mm-hmm. I mean, every once in a while, you're going to run into a group that, you know, rubs you the wrong way. But for the most part, we all have the like mind that this is a passion. And it's competitive, you know, from brand to brand, and from shop to shop. But at the end of the day, we can all be friends and go out and burn some tires and have some fun.
Yeah.
To be associated with these guys at SpeedCore, man, I am honored and privileged to be kind of like one of the little ambassadors for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because their operation is tip top, man. I mean, the technology that they're running at their shop and across the street from their shop, the ability to get stuff done on a very creative level to today's standards using today's machinery is, I don't see it duplicated in any other shop of that size.
So these guys are using CAD software to design parts. They're 3D printing to prototype parts, and then they're using billet and CNC machines to manufacture parts, and that's just on the aluminum side. Then they're also prototyping carbon fiber. Do they have a giant autoclave? Is there a giant oven there? How do they?
Maybe. There might be, yes. There's quite possible that was a big yes. Yeah. It was bitching, man. I mean, it was a futuristic shop. I mean, it was a blend between the muscle car passion that we all know and today's technology. And it's cool because they're just taking it to another level.
Yeah.
You can tell by their products, and you can tell by Jesus Christ what they pump out. I mean, those cars for Fast and Furious, you know, the Evolution, the other Tantrum. The twin turbo all carbon fiber Demon. I mean, they're setting the bar pretty damn high. I mean, they've got the world record. We're going to try to get the world record in a four door when the Charger gets done. Because hold on a second, we're twin turboing the Charger.
Yeah.
It's going to be bitching, man.
Are you going to compound boost it? Are you going to keep the supercharger and put turbos, or are you going to remove the supercharger?
It's still up for debate. What we're doing right now is we're reinforcing everything to hold 12 to 1,400 horsepower. 12 to 1,500 horsepower on the Charger.
On the Charger. And what was there a discussion about an all-wheel drive conversion?
A little bit, you know. I think that we've put that to the side right now.
It seemed like they were a little early in the R&D.
Exactly, exactly. We're going to put that to the side. I mean, yeah, if I didn't have that car and I bought an entry level, you know, police interceptor with all wheel drive, then yeah, it would give us the ability to go that way. But for the time being at this stage, I don't think it's the right time to do it.
Okay.
It just gives me the ability to want to do something
to do something
in the future,
else later. But, yeah.
You know, basically the big plan on that car is to make the transformation quite similar to what the Challenger went through. The Challenger, you know, I did an appearance at Summerfest, the largest music festival in the country up there, on Sunday. And then Speedcore had a tent, you know, with a number of the cars. I mean, Jesus, they had the all carbon fiber twin turbo Demon in there. They had my wide body Hellcat Challenger in there. They had that Charger from Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
They had Captain America's Camaro in there.
Yeah.
They had a 71 GTX. It was a badass car. I mean, everything they put their footprint on is just really cool. And the best part about it is they're like the Ring Brothers.
Yeah.
In that you have to search very closely to find the details that they've done, because they're so simplistic. You know, they flow. It's artwork. It really is. They've taken it to another level.
Well, they certainly give a lot of attention. A lot of the big builders now, there's a lot of attention given to the different textures and coatings and things. Before, it was all about you would spend all this time on doing something custom that's subtle on the car, but then you'd make it pop with chrome and bright colors to accent all the work you put into it. And now it's all about, you know, for quite a few years now, it's all about kind of doing all of that work, but just using, you know, colors and textures to kind of blend it in to make it seem like it was kind of an OE thing. But now you have to kind of walk through. There's so many cars over at SEMA, like you're saying, Ring Brothers and Chip Foos and Bodie Stroud and Speedcore and all these guys. You got to walk through them and go, yeah, looks good. What did you do? And they're like, how much time do you have? Because this is going to take a while.
I mean, you can look at these cars five or six different trips by and still not be able to point out what they've done. I mean, that's the beauty of these artists' creation is that they make it blend and flow to where it doesn't stick out.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me about Speedcore, the reason why I was kind of asking you about sort of the behind the scenes workings, is look, there's a lot of really good shops out there, but in the hot rod world, you know, even if you built $1 million car, you can only build so many of these a year, and you're always sort of limited financially to how you can grow your business. You know, even a Foos, who's arguably the most famous builder out there right now, it's still kind of limited. Like, he's one man. He's got a bunch of people working for him, but he's still kind of one man and gets his hands dirty. And it's like, how can a guy like that afford giant autoclaves and multiple CNC machines that could cost $250,000 a piece? And it's like, it's so much work going on that you're kind of limited. Like this isn't a factory with hundreds of people. So it's interesting to me how Speedcore is, I don't know, for lack of a better term, so well funded. You know,
well, like, yeah, and that's what it is, and it's about your strategy, and the fact is that they've got machines to supersede the labor force. You know, they've got the ability to manufacture parts, you know, with one or two guys there with the machinery that basically does it all. You know, you plug a program in, or mm-hmm. you move a part here and you move a part there and you put a part in. It's like going down to HRE and seeing them with a big block, you know, of metal, and then it goes in and boom, 24 hours later, it comes out to be a wheel.
Yeah. See, so that's a good example. So HRE already has a very successful business making wheels, and in-house they have the machines, they have the powder coating, the finishing services. But then if you said, hey, HRE is going to start building hot rods and they're going to hire 10 guys and they start building hot rods, I would go, okay, I get it. They can do that because they have a successful wheel business that pays the bills and allows them to afford giant machines that other people can't afford. So Speedcore must be making a lot of other parts, either white label for other people or selling a bunch of their own parts. There has to be sort of another business. Look, you and I love drag racing. In the drag racing world, like you look at like Coletta's, they're out there, they're racing again and again and again. Jegs, you know, the Jegs team, they're out there and they're racing, but they have a huge mail order business. You know, that.
Yeah, one's got to support the other. Yeah. There's no question. I mean, you know, when you've got a guy, if you're the initial guy that wants to come in and pay for the molds for the new wide body Challenger or the new wide body Charger or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that initial cost is going to go right through the roof, but they've got the ability and clientele to be able to present that package, and someone will take it and buy it to be that first guy. Then once they've got the molds, you know, the next customer doesn't have to incur that expense. And then it's just basically paying for the part and the labor.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine an extremely large corporation mechanically shoved into a little operation, but you just take out all of the labor. You know, there's, mm-hmm. I don't know how many people are working in there, 10 to 40 people or something like that, but it's sure not labor intensive as far as the amount of people that they shove in that facility.
Yeah.
They're all artists. They're all specialists. And, it's completely different than any shop I've ever been to.
Yeah.
It's so much more futuristic. And, you know, you talk about the next thing. I mean, there was one time I think you and I were speaking about carbon fiber that, you know, that comes in different colors.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. They showed me swatches of every freaking color you can imagine in carbon fiber.
Yeah. So I had a business a while ago. We were doing some carbon fiber stuff years and years ago before it was even kind of mainstream in the aftermarket. Now, it's a different industry I was working in. I was dabbling in aerospace and some other stuff. And the carbon fiber itself is always sort of that blackish gray, but you can start using carbon Kevlar or Kevlar. And Kevlar is also a brand name, I think, by DuPont. So I think Aramis is the generic name for it. And you can start using like Kevlar, sort of a synthetic version of carbon fiber. Different makeup, but you can start doing different colors with it, and also you can start tinting and coloring the epoxy, basically the hard coating around the carbon fiber. Carbon fiber is just a weave of material. It's strands that you have to put together, basically, and you encase it in different types of an epoxy, and depending on the quality of your carbon fiber pieces, some are dry carbon fiber, some are not, some are vacuum sealed, you get the air bubbles out, and it's like you can change the quality of that epoxy based off of, I don't know, strength and durability and things like that. I remember, if you remember years ago, I want to say the C6 Corvette, they did the ZR1 and it had like the carbon fiber roof, you know, the Targa roof and stuff on it, and GM had a big thing. They're like, yeah, we had to do a huge experiment on a clear coat that so the carbon fiber wouldn't turn yellow. It's not really the material. It's the epoxy that makes it hard that does that. So many like inexpensive like carbon fiber hoods that are running around all over town. You see them, they start to turn yellow and stuff. And it's, you know, because of that sun damage happening to it. But now there's been so much more advances with UV protectant and different types of clear coats and different epoxies and stuff. So yeah, anyway, you can color those things and stuff all the time. You can, it's a lot more available now to do those types of things. There's actually,
but in all honesty, you know, all of the colors do not look great by any means.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, the quality sometimes doesn't carry over to a certain color, and you know, they've, as far as the regular carbon fiber as it appears now, mm-hmm. I mean, it seems as if they've perfected that. I mean, every panel that they put out that I've seen that's been on my car or the cars that were in their shop, I mean, you know, the patterns match up from panel to panel. I mean, it's just true artwork.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The guys at HRE, we spoke to them at one point, and they were experimenting with different carbon fiber wheels and pieces of wheels with carbon fiber. And they put a little bit of a tint or a tint clear coat to finish it on top, because the effect, the look that people wanted from a carbon fiber wheel wasn't the more natural looking carbon fiber. So they had to put like a little bit of a tint into it, and it looks fantastic. But those guys are so great at aesthetics as well as they are of making wheels. So. Pretty interesting.
Like you said,
stuff.
They're artists, man. I mean, they're not just mechanics anymore. The creativity that is out in this automotive world is, man, thank God for it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
All right. So what else did you talk to those guys about?
We got the M715 that's probably going to go up there next.
I was going to say, you have to have a truck project.
The Hellcat's going to go, the Hellcat motor's going to go in that thing. And, you know, as you saw on the concept Gladiator,
mm-hmm.
on the truck bed, all that intricate work that was done. Well, Speedcore can get all that done at their facility. With all of their tooling, they can replicate what was done on that trunk bed. Now, I do not want mine nearly as intricate and as pretty as that one, because I want mine functional. But it's just pretty freaking wild that in-house they can get all that done.
Yeah, that's interesting. Then to have to sort of design it sort of modular so they can assemble it, you know? It'd be weird, but, you know, you'd have a $100,000 billet aluminum bed.
It's crazy.
Just the cost of aluminum alone, then just machining off thousands of pounds to pocket it and shape it and do all that stuff.
Oh,
it would be insane.
Yeah.
It'd probably be a little too much. But like you said, you want to use
all of
it,
this,
though.
All of the everything you just said made my right glute hurt, because that's where I keep my wallet. I mean,
yeah,
right.
Anyway, so it sounds good. I like that. So those guys are going to be working on the military truck, or at least they're going to start.
Yeah.
Coming
now,
up with a plan.
Now we got some information. Also, it looks as if, so you know that four door, I don't know what it's called, the JT or TJ, the Jeep, the 2018 four door longer wheel based Jeep that they had. It looks like that's what they used on that concept vehicle as the chassis. So we got that information, and that seems as if it's going to make this process a hell of a lot easier. And that's also why they shortened the bed up 8 inches.
Yeah,
I think they moved the wheelbase on the 715 to match.
Interesting. Oh,
yeah, I mean, it makes complete sense, because, you know, everybody's got parts to go with that chassis, for God's sakes. You can go, you know, as wild as you want with it, and it's all updated.
It's
going to be an all new chassis, drivetrain, everything. The only static part that'll be old school will be the truck itself. And that's going
to be
carbon. And you know, the cab's going to be carbon fiber most likely. So,
oh wow! Did you send the truck up there already or no?
No, the Charger's on the way there. The Challenger is there, and the truck will be picked up here pretty soon. I don't want to overstay my welcome at Speed Corps, so I think I may have to get one done before I send the truck up there. I don't know.
Well, the Challenger's going up for the roll cage, and I don't know if it's getting some other things as well. But
Whipple.
Oh yeah, you guys are doing the Whipple. So, but that's not a huge project for them. They've done that before, and they've done the roll cage already once. So that can be a little bit quicker turnaround for them.
Oh yeah, the Charger's going to be long. It's going to be a while, you know, because we're gonna do the carbon fiber transformation that we did on the Challenger on the Charger.
Yeah.
The turbos are going to be, it's going to be, it might be a little fitment issue. It's going to take a little while, but, it is what it is.
All right, well, that's good.
Good things come to those who wait.
So, yeah.
And they haven't fabricated a cage for that Charger yet. So mine may be the first one.
Yeah, so a four-door cage. You're going to have to do sort of taxi style, like a lot of cross taxi style kind of roll cage. You have to come up with something for that. That'll be kind of fun.
It's going
to
be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
All right, I've got another truck question for you guys in a minute. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off your dry cleaning. You pick up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. You just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Check out geico.com. I woke up over the weekend, and for some reason, I woke up going, hey, I think I want a Ford Lightning, a Gen 1.
Why Gen 1?
I you know what it is? It is so the Gen 2, I love the engine and it's supercharged and whatnot, but it's so kind of roundish and kind of puffy and step side and the whole thing. And there was something Gen 1 where it's kind of boxy style that I just thought was kind of neat. I don't know. It just felt more trucked to me, and so here's the thing: I also love a GMC Cyclone and the Typhoon, but Ford's answer to that was, "Hey, those are cool little trucks, but they don't really you can't tow anything and you can barely put anything in the back." So Ford said, "We're going to do a Lightning," and when the Lightning came out, it pulled 0.88 G's in the turns, and it was 0-60 in 7.5 seconds. By the way, I can't say for sure, but I think a Raptor today is still 7.5 seconds, 0-60. Different animal for sure, and off road, and the big suspension, the heavy tires and stuff. But I don't know, the Lightning seemed kind of cool, and then for me, so what I did is I put it out there on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and I said, hey, guys, should I do it or not? Let me know. You guys vote. Should I do it or not? And a lot of guys hit me up, and they go, why get a Lightning? You can get an F-150, and you can do it however you want. Here's the other portion of it is SVT, the Special Vehicle Team at Ford, in 93, they came out with the 93 Cobra and the 93 Gen 1 Lightning. So I kind of like the idea of having an SVT truck to go with my SVT Cobra.
And, so that's where that came from.
And yeah, and I like the idea of it having that VIN number. So I know there's a cool F-150 you can make or whatever, but I want that VIN number, even though if I modify the truck, because that's what we do here. My Cobra's got tons of hours and tons of money into it, but I've got an original, I've got the original GT40 heads. I got the VIN number. It's it's been modified, but it's all done somewhat period correct. So I kind of like the idea of this. And I know everybody online is giving me shit. Why don't you finish one project before the next project? Because that's not what we do here.
Yeah, that's impossible.
That's not what we do here. And yes, and there is a plan for the Cobra, and it is going to get worked on. And my buddy Ray is probably going to help me out with that as well. It's going to move over to his shop eventually. so he can do some things on it. And yeah, an SVT Lightning can tow a 93 Cobra. That can happen.
I was just going to say, you know, because initially when the Raptors came out, if you towed, it would void the warranty, right?
Oh, I don't, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. So you couldn't tow. You couldn't tow with them. That's why I initially didn't want one. I was going to buy one for Wanda.
Yeah,
and so they were interesting. It's interesting to know that from the onset, you could tow in that Gen 1 Lightning.
You can. Now, don't quote me on these specs, but I think like the payload was like 700 or 750 pounds in the bed, and the towing capacity is like 5,000. It's enough to put a car on a trailer and drag it around town. I mean, I wouldn't go across
one of your cars.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, one of my cars. Like a 3,200-pound Cobra or 3,300-pound Cobra in a trailer. Yeah, I can tow that around, and it's fine. And keep in mind that there are some similarities. So the Cobra has a 302, iron block, iron heads 302, and the Lightning is a 351. But the 351 didn't have a mass airflow conversion. It was a speed density, so a little tougher to tune. And it has hydraulic flat tappet cams, not roller cams, which is something I can change. But it has the GT40 heads. It basically has the same GT40 cylinder heads on this truck that it does on my Cobra. And although I have a Cobra intake, it's modeled after the GT40 tubular intake. And the GT40 tubular intake manifold is what the Lightning has. So it has a very similar intake. They both have like the 65 millimeter Ford, you know, motorsport throttle body on it. They both have the GT40 heads on it. And, you know, so there's some similarities. And believe me, I've done so much work on the Fox bodies and stuff over the years. I can't imagine opening the hood of this truck and going, what's going on in here? Like, I think I could pretty much figure out everything. I know it has a couple little things. I know the distributor cap, I think, was unique on the Lightning. Instead of having brass terminals, it was aluminum terminals and whatnot. But there's all these things that I'm very familiar with. So I don't know. I just kind of like the idea. They're inexpensive to get. And so I put it out there. And let me check the current status of the Twitter poll. And it is 66% people say, sure, you should buy it. 34% say, nah, it's too old. And then I put it up on Instagram this morning. And this was kind of funny. I put it up, got a bunch of comments, and the comments are still coming in, and people are like, yes, you should do it. Build it as a tow rig for the Mustang Cobra. Steve Austin said, what are you waiting for? Do it. So he's a truck
guy.
Well,
you know what Austin's going to say.
Yeah, we know.
You know. Part of Austin rubbed off on you to want to purchase that truck.
It kind of did. He's got his old truck over there. I think he sent I think he's got his Camaro, his Z28, which was here in LA getting some work done, and he sent it to his ranch, to his Broken Skull Ranch to play with over there. A lot of guys are saying you should do it. One guy says they're slow and overpriced, but definitely buy it. my friend Ali Fiore, she's like, I speak for all the ladies, hard pass. So she's out. She doesn't want it. And there's been quite a bit of consensus where a lot of the guys are like, yeah, you should do that for sure. And then the girls are like, nah, you should not do that. So I don't know. Like, it could be kind of fun. I got to think of something fun to do with it. I tell you what I don't want to do. I don't want to turn it into a huge project. And it's easy for us to say that all the time. We always say that, and then it always turns into a huge project. I don't want to do like a coyote swap or something radical like that, because I do want the period correct stuff. I want the original intake manifold and the cylinder heads. I want it to be numbers matching. So I don't mind doing some mods to it, but I want to keep it sort of a numbers matching truck. And maybe we do what we do here is if I can turn it into something that's kind of fun, and then somewhere down the line, maybe we sell it to somebody who's listening and wants to enjoy it. But I don't know. What do you think? Should I get a truck?
Absolutely. I think there's no question.
Is everybody on board with a Gen 1 Lightning, or do you feel like Gen 2 Lightning?
Put it this way. I think you ought to get the Gen 1, because in all honesty, I never knew there was a Gen. I never knew that there was that the Lightning came out in that year.
Yeah, it was 93 to 95, and then the Gen 2
cool.
didn't
you're
come
familiar
out
with, like you said, you're familiar with the engine.
Yeah.
As it sits. I think it's cool. They're not that expensive. I'd grab one up and tow your car with it.
Yeah.
Because you need to tow that thing anyway.
I got to tow it anyway.
You need other people to tow it all the time, so why not do it yourself?
I got to tow it anyway. This is funny. I have to take it to Ray's shop at some point, and I've got to tow it there because he's the dyno guy. He has to be the first one to fire it up. So at a minimum, I'm definitely towing the vehicle once, and I think we're going to be moving shops, so I got to tow it again. So there definitely, and I know, so there was a couple of comments. I saw the photo as well. Lady Gaga has one. Lady Gaga has, I think, a red Gen 1 Lightning. and all of a sudden, I'm like a fan now. Like, I'm like, if that's what she's driving, like, if she has that, and because I don't know how she comes up with that truck. Nobody over at, like, Symbolic or whatever, or Auto Gallery goes, hey, Lady Gaga, you know what you need? Forget the Bugattis and Ferraris that we sell. You need a Gen 1 Lightning for 15 grand. There's no way that happens. She has to have some sort of history or connection, or wherever she grew up in New York or Jersey or whatever, she must have been like familiar with them, or like just like her age. Maybe she was just like in school at the time, or dad had one, or dated a guy at the time. Like, there's got to be some emotional connection to it that I want to hear that story. Like, I want to know why she has a Gen 1 Lightning. I love the fact that she does, but I want to know what the story is. It wasn't because she was walking through a dealer lot and said, hey, look at this bright red square-bodied Ford truck with 240 horsepower. Like, that's not exactly. going to be it. It's not going to be it. So
there has to be some backstory.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm giving you – I've never owned one, but the story of I was around when they came out and they seemed cool at the time and they got a lot of press and all kinds of cool stuff. I don't know. That's kind of why I'm thinking Gen 1 Lightning. And they're cheap and they're everywhere. It's funny because they didn't make a ton of them, but they're always kind of available. You know, it's just kind of fun. You got to find the right one. You don't want too many miles. But if it's never been driven, it's got 10,000 miles, people want $30,000 for them. I don't know if it's worth that, but that's what they want. And then if it's 130,000 or 160,000 miles, that's too many miles for what I want to do with it. I'm going to end up rebuilding the engine. And I don't know if I want to do that. I'm not opposed
to
it.
Remember, I was thinking about this kind of this thing for a little while when I found that 450-mile on the odometer SRT 10 truck.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a tough one, right? It's like it's got 450 miles. You're going to pay the premium for it. You're going to get a cool truck. But now, is it too few miles to drive?
Like, exactly. You know, it's a conundrum.
Yeah.
You know?
So this is what I mean.
But then think about it. You know, you got enough cars. When are you going to drive it that much? How many miles are you realistically going to put on that in a year?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Look, I think I need to find a truck that's probably 70 to 80,000 miles. But, you know, to your point, when I did the Nissan thing at the New York Auto Show, they announced the 50th anniversary 370Z. And there's a black and silver version and a red and white version. And the red and white version, they're only making 50 of. So I told Corolla, I was like, you have the BRE cars. You have four of them. You have the Hino truck. This car isn't super expensive, 40 grand, you know, for him at least. It's not super expensive. I was like, maybe you should get one of these. And he's like, yeah, it might be kind of interesting in the collection. And he goes, but I wouldn't really drive it that much. I said, yeah, but it's a stick and you can practice heel toe driving every year right before you go to Monterey. He's like, yeah, okay, order
okay.
one. Yeah. So he's going to drive it 3 weeks a year, right? You know, like leading up to Monterey, he's going to drive it for a few weeks and it's going to be great and it's going to sit in the collection next to the other BRE cars. So that's an example of Adam could have that car for 10 years and have 4,000 miles on it in 10 years, or, you know, maybe 3,000 miles on it. You know, yeah. I don't know. I think I need to find something that's probably like 70 to 80,000 miles, under 100. I don't want to pay the premium for a 35,000 mile truck. You know, 60, 70, 80,000 is good. And I'll come up with a couple cool things. One thing I am thinking about, I haven't talked to these guys in a while, but the Lightning has a 4-speed automatic. So the fourth gear, the third gear is the 1-to-1 ratio, and the fourth gear is the overdrive. It's like a 0.71 overdrive or something. And I know we're getting close on time here, but the guys at Gear Vendors, they replace the tail housing of your transmission. They can do an automatic or manual, but they replace the tail housing of your automatic transmission. In this case, the 4-speed in the Lightning. And by the way, the Lightning doesn't have the regular AOD whatever 4-speed. It has the super heavy duty one out of like an F-350 truck from the 90s. So it handles all the power you want. And what the Gear Vendors does is it adds a splitter gear in between everything. So you basically get 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5, and then a double overdrive. So instead of a 0.71 overdrive, it also adds like a 0.51 overdrive. So this does two things, which is very, very cool. One is you can get on the freeway and you can cruise and it'll cut another 800 RPM or so with a 410 gear that rear. It'll cut another 800 RPM or so off of your cruising speed at 60, 70 miles an hour and be a little bit more fuel efficient. But also having more gears during your acceleration keeps you in that power band. If you think about a 4-speed transmission now, and especially if the fourth gear is an overdrive, you have 3 real acceleration gears. When you are in first gear, you hammer down, it gets to second gear, and when it shifts, it drops a lot of RPM, and then you got to wind it back up again. And then at third, it drops a lot again. By splitting the gears, by adding more gears, by doubling the gears from 4 to 8, you get less drop in between gears, and it keeps that power band going. So you'll get better acceleration as well. So this is a lot of the reason why. Look, everybody talks about 8-speed transmissions, 9-speed, new Ford 10-speeds and GM 10-speeds. It's not just for the fuel economy. It's when they tune it correctly, it's for performance as well. So it's a little bit about transmission. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, it would be cool. Do a Gear Vendors unit on the back of this transmission. Turn that 4-speed into an 8-speed with a double overdrive.
Ooh.
Kind of interesting. By the way, those Gear Vendor units, those things are beefy as hell. They handle like 2,500 horsepower. All the guys that do like the land speed record cars that go 300 miles an hour stuff, they all basically run a Gear Vendors unit because they want the extra gears to get up to speed, and then they want that overdrive to hit that high mile an hour. These things are bulletproof. Bulletproof. And there's a button you can put on your shifter, your dash, and you can click that button to activate it or to put it into the double overdrive. So it's a cool unit. It's not inexpensive, but these guys have been around for like 30 something years. So
speaking of inexpensive or expensive,
yeah.
Do you have any idea off the top of your head what a sequential transmission is going to cost me?
You know, there's a pretty big variation in between that, but I would say, I can't say for sure, but whatever you're spending on a pretty good, let's say, 6-speed manual conversion, it would probably be double. Yeah, I would say double. We talked about this before because Adam did the Trans Am race and he had the sequential transmission in that that C7R Corvette and loved it. And he's like, "How do I put these in one of my vintage cars and kind of hide
yeah.
it?" And he said, "Well, we could do it on one of the cars if you want." And then I think we ran some numbers and he's like, "I don't know if it's $8,000 or $10,000 for a transmission."
When I went to Kurt Busch's place,
yeah.
when I was in Mooresville a little while ago, he had an old CUDA that had one in it. And I asked the guys, and God, my jaw almost hit the floor when they told me the price of the damn thing.
Yeah, and theirs is probably a very expensive racy version. I can't say for sure, but I would probably guess somewhere it could range anywhere from maybe 8 to 20.
Now, you know, quite obviously, that's going to be something you can't drive every day.
Yeah,
know?
But I'll tell you what. So Adam got into it.
That being the case, I don't think it's going to be an option for my charger.
Yeah, maybe not. There's probably some street version. That's what you got to do the research on, is who's running like a street version that makes sense. But I'll tell you, Adam's been running these vintage cars for years. He got into that car with the sequential transmission, and he just was raving about it. Now, that was on the racetrack. He's like, that thing was so cool, so much fun. And his sequential in that car was not a paddle shifter one. It had the shifter, and he was just banging it up and down. Yeah, it was kind of badass. But anyway, we had some more stuff. We're gonna run out of time here. But guys, check out the gaming app that we talked about before. Go to Make Model. Search Make Model on the App Store, and you can play this. You can play this game. It shows you all these pictures, pieces of cars, and you kind of guess in speed rounds which cars they are. And Goldberg, I think you've got a bunch of your cars in there,
we just downloaded them. You know, another cool thing for the players is that, you know, once you get to a certain point or a certain level, you can start downloading your personal car, and it could possibly show up in the app. I just posted something on Instagram that had a shot of six shots of cars. They're all mine.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Mopar, well, one Ford in there, but it's really neat. You know, it's such a simplistic game, but if you know, it's going to draw more people in if you can have a say in the visual aspect of the game by putting and downloading your own photos in there, and it's going to make people play more. You know, to see their photo pop up. We're going to be doing a challenge. We're going to be, you know, I'll be challenging you probably next week on here.
Yep,
and then we'll get Austin involved and Finnegan and, you know, everybody out there. I'd like to do a challenge with Leno, but it's just a fun little game. It's something that we've done, you know, I've done for 45 years, whether it was with my dad or my brothers or now my son in the car.
Just driving around.
Identify cars going down the road.
It's
really cool.
It's kind of like Simon Says for cars. First of all, if you get Steve Austin, I'm going to crush him. I will crush Austin.
Oh, no question. We'll kill him.
So follow Goldberg's Garage on Instagram, because he's going to be doing kind of a fun promo. You guys can play the game, and when you see his cars, you grab some screenshots and a number of people, maybe 50 or so people, will get autographed photos. We're working out the details for that. But all the rules and how to play that will show up on Instagram. So do this. Follow Goldberg's Garage on Instagram and follow at PlayMakeModel on Instagram. PlayMakeModel, all one word, on Instagram. And you guys can participate in that as well. So
learn about cars.
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of a fun thing to do.
It's a cool way to pass your time by being in front of one of your devices and actually get something out of it when you're done with the game. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's enjoyable. It ain't the easiest damn thing. I mean, some of them are really easy, but it's frustrating to be Goldberg and to get car questions wrong, but that just makes me want to go in there and rectify my bad answer by all good answers. You know, it's fun, it's addictive, and it ain't hurting nobody.
All right, guys, check that out. Of course, you can check us out at carcastshow.com. You can follow me at Moderator on all the social media and go up there. And it's going to be up there for a while. Hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and vote on the Gen 1 Lightning. Should I do it? If you've got some cool ideas, share them. I love reading all the comments, so check that out. Of course, you got Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter and Goldberg95, Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. Events coming up, I believe it's August 30th. Adam and I have there's a car show in Portland at this car museum. Tickets are available, and then you can hang out and watch us do CarCast live. Adam and I doing it live, and our guest is Mario Andretti. So I'm excited about that. That's in Portland. I believe it's a Friday, August 30th. And then our big CarCast event is going to be the weekend after SEMA, or the last weekend of SEMA. We're going to do a Friday night screening of the Shelby Dock and a meet and greet. And then we're going to hit Speed Vegas. And there's going to be cars you guys can rent and race around, Ferraris and Corvettes and Roush Mustangs and stuff. And then do car show event is there as well. So we're going to wrap things up. I see guys lining up outside to get into the studio. Thanks, Bill, of course, as always. And until next time, keep the air and the spare and the bag and the wheel.
Oh, well, see you soon.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.